Oh, I want to reach this fan and know you right now.
Welcome to Two Trolls and a Brew.
Oh, God. A podcast theoretically about killing Travis's. I mean, Magic the Gathering. I've been doing so hard. I've been spending so much time and energy this last, I don't know, 2 weeks or so. I'm trying to get the hell out of the politics right now. So disappointing. So depressing. But, I don't know. Hopefully.
Yeah, both sides.
Whoever guy you like will win and do well, and then the other guy will lose. Do them. My guy didn't win, so. I found it. I actually found the coverage for like 2 seconds of the other GP, and then I lost it.
Was it some sort of agent? Ooh,
Grand Prix. Grand Prix Toyota. Kyoto. T-O-K-Y-O.
Tokyo?
No. I would be able to pronounce Tokyo.
Spell it again.
T-O-K-Y-O.
That's Tokyo.
No, I'd be able to read Tokyo. I know that word.
That is 100% Tokyo.
No, you're just trying to make me feel like an ass right now.
Oh, so the title, well, I'll quit trying and let everyone else
just let everybody else be, go, ha ha ha, Samus, you're so dumb. You're so stupid. The title of this week's show, Meal Causes Salt. Salty goodness. And a subtitle, Madness Vampires Beats Werewolves in Draft. I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll get into it. Troll cards of the week. This week, I'm picking Tameo's Journal. I hear we have a couple of interesting stories with it. And then yours is Voldaren Duelist?
Yeah, hold on a minute. Back in.
Oh, so much bad. So I guess I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about my draft deck while Travis is not allowed to talk until the vacuum is over. So I actually drafted this really sweet one. I took a picture and sent it to Travis, but I don't think I really did it justice. I am going to go ahead and piece it together and put a screenshot up. I'm going to give you some highlights here. I have Expose Evil and Jace's Scrutiny. Both of those are instants that essentially stop damage and make a clue token. Open the Armory is a spell that I'm actually really becoming... developing a lot of respect for. Search your library for an aura or an equipment card. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. The reason why this card is so important is because I had a Bound of Moonsilver, which is one of the better removal spells in this format, especially in the deck as this starts coming together, you'll see what I'm talking about. I have an Ongoing Investigation. It's a 2-mana enchantment. When it comes into play, I investigate. But then, more importantly, when one or more of my creatures does combat damage to an opponent, I get to investigate. So that's pretty awesome. It's got another ability where I can exile a creature, investigate, and gain some life, but it doesn't really matter. I have a Magnifying Glass. The key of this deck, 2 Fleeting Memories. It's a 3-mana enchantment. But when it enters the battlefield, I investigate. And then whenever you sacrifice a clue, target player basically mills the top 3 cards of their library. I have 2 of those. I also have 2 Trail of Evidences, which are a little less good, but they're still pretty solid. I have a Broken Concentration, a Silver Strike as my removal spell. I just had the 1. I had a Thraben Inspector, who also makes a clue. He's a 1-2 for 1 that makes a clue. Wildfell Scarecrow, he was basically a 1-4. Defender creature that could fix my mana. I did run 2 forests in my deck, which were never really a problem, just in case I got the Ongoing Investigation and needed to gain the life, which did actually keep me alive one game. A couple of cruddy creatures in here. Basically, the different human things that, like, when they die, they can turn into a 1/1 flyer spirit. A Drownyard Explorer, which is a 2/4 for 4 that makes a clue when it enters the battlefield. And then I got my power cards here. My first pick of the draft was a Jace, Unraveler of Secrets. Normally, I advise people in this set to try to stay away from blue. I feel blue is really bad in this set. But I had just, at over dinner, discussed with the family the more than $10 cards, and Jace was on the list of more than $10 cards. So I certainly couldn't pass it, so I went ahead and I grabbed it. And then I picked up a Tamio's Journal, which is, again, my troll card of the week. The really thing that makes this very special is it gives you the ability to sacrifice 3 clues at once, which we'll kind of get to in the story in a second. And I had one to sin upon the sinful, which I really think is an amazing card. I'm kind of flashing at the camera, but no one can really tell what it is. But it's actually really sweet. Exiles all creatures for 6 mana. If you have Delirium, you can put an angel into the battlefield. A 4/4 flying angel. Pretty pleased. So I was actually able to get 1 or 2 of these fleeting memories down, make a bunch of clues, and mill people out with almost no problem. I think I lost 1 game, and I lost that game to the werewolf player because I could not cast Open the Armory and a Bound for Moonsliver in the same turn because I didn't have double white. I just had 1 white, which actually kind of was a problem. I did have a Jace that game, but it wasn't going to be enough to save me, so I never played it. I did a lot of things with Descend Upon the Sinful. It was actually my MVP, probably. Just being able to like wipe their board and maybe actually make a win condition. Yeah. I did use the Angel at least a couple of times to win the game. But the sweetest thing that I had was when a game against probably one of the stronger players we had, not really Unlimited, but in general, his name is Addison. We've kind of kicked it around before. I had 2 fleeting memories, and this was game 2, and he was beating me down. He was the other werewolf player. It was like a green-white deck, but he opened the werewolf planeswalker. What's her name?
Arlancord.
So he was splashing Arlancord, which he had down on the field, and he made a token with her. So he had like 18 or 19 points of power on the field. So I didn't have a lot of choices left. So I knew I had 1 hit. I was going to take 1 hit. So I played the Tamio's Journal, and then he hit me down to like 8 or something, or 6 or something. I don't remember exactly. And then on my upkeep, I was able to make the clue token from Tamio's on the upkeep. And then I had asked him like 4 or 5 times how many cards he had in his library. And he counted and he told me. And I'm like, was it more or less than 18? I can't remember. So I guess I blow up these 3 clues, mill him 18, and get the Wrath, and then Wrath, and hope that he can't do like 6 or 7, well, however, any not kill me that turn, and then I could, you know, make another clue on my upkeep and mill him out. Well, it turned out he had 17 cards in his library, so I went ahead and I won that turn. But it literally came from nowhere, because there was no way I should have had enough time if I did not have the ability to mill all or to sacrifice 3 clues at once, because I didn't have the mana to do that. I mean, I drew the 6th mana that turn, so I could have done it without that, but I didn't know. Like, if I didn't have the Tamio's Journal, I wouldn't have had the ability to mill him out. I don't know. I thought it was very cool. The deck went 4-0 at our local draft. Like I said, the only game I dropped was against the other very aggressive werewolf deck. This was the guy who had, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 werewolves. And was just super aggressive. Red, green, aggressive werewolves. But games 2 and 3, I was able to get there on the back of opening the armory for the the control spell. There was an awful lot of times where I had a bunch of clues and no way to sacrifice them except for using the Bound by Moonsliver to sacrifice the clues to get the milling going, which was also very strong. So that was my draft. I hope your sister's done vacuuming because you butted in a couple of times. Oh, maybe not.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, she's done. I complained at her and told her I'd do it afterwards. Yeah, with, you know, draft, I had a pretty fun one, but I'll do the whole Tamio's Journal thing first. Okay. This weekend, which, or this Friday, last Friday, which is why, you know, the title is Mill Causes Salt. I was playing my blue-white Investigate deck, Investigate Mill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And this is and, for your standard Friday match.
Yeah, yeah, for standard. So I was running Fleeting Memories, the Erdwall Illuminator, and Trail of Evidence to create the Investigate tokens. And then I was basically all of my spells either stalled their creatures or removed creatures from the games. Let me tell you what. Engulf the Shore is an MVP in that deck.
Yeah?
Yeah, because right now in the meta, it's obviously heavy creatures. So control decks are, you know, they're somewhat, you know, lacking, more or less. I don't want to say that, but they kind of are. So, I had 4 Send to Sleeps and 4 Expose Evil for early game. And then, yeah, I have Tamio's Journal, Descend Upon the Sinful, you know, all the control stuff. Mm-hmm. So, there's one point in the game when I had Tamio's Journal out, Trail of Evidence, and Fleeting Memories. So, you know, every turn I was creating, or every upkeep of my upkeeps, I was creating the clue token. Plus, you know, if I played something on their turn, I was getting at least 1 clue token, depending on if my spell had investigate or not.
Right.
So I was looking for a win condition, or I guess I should say an exile condition. So after my upkeep, I activated Tamio's Journal to sacrifice the 3 clues and mill my opponent 9. And he's like, wait, what do you mean mill me 9? I was like, Fleeting Memories. I sacrificed them. And he looks at it. He goes, oh, well, I guess it doesn't say how you sacrifice it. It's just sacrifice it. I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, that's damn irritating. And then, so I got Descend Upon the Sinful and I, you know, exiled the whole field and, you know, from there, it was just top deck mode for him. While me, I was just constantly... Yep. So, I mean, you know, what a control deck does. It filters and it gets the stuff.
Yeah, I've been very impressed, to be really honest, with the clues in general.
Yeah.
Goldfish, actually... let's see if I can find it. They actually put out a deck... in Modern, they're calling it a Mono Blue Control.
Yeah.
And it actually runs, I think, what is it called? It's the new counterspell out of the set. Confirm Suspicions. It's a 5-mana counter.
The one that makes the 3.
But yeah, you investigate 3 clues, or you investigate 3 times.
Yeah.
Actually, very, very strong in a situation where you can stick it, because that lets you... do the thing that you... sure, you could draw them right now, which would also be really good, but 5-mana counter spell draw 3 is probably too good.
Right.
Right? But well, 5-mana counter target spell and then have the 3 clues sit there, so when they say go, you can pop 1 off at a time and still keep counter magic up.
Right, well... I mean, it's bad enough that it's 5-mana counter spell, draw 3 whenever you want, but it's even worse when it's, you know, 5-mana counterspell, and then tutor.
Right. I mean, I think Tamio's Journal's got a lot of capabilities and possibilities with it. I just think that these clues, this investigatability, is not seeing its full potential yet.
Nope, not yet.
I really think that this thing is very, very solid. And I'm really hoping that there's going to be some sort of burn spell in this upcoming set that'll be worth playing. Like, can you just imagine, like, a 2-mana, do 2 damage, target creature, player, investigate?
That would be sick.
Like, that would be amazing, especially in Modern.
I was going to say, that's going to be a Modern staple if it comes out.
Something along those lines. I could even see a 3-mana, do 3 damage, investigate. Like, that seems to be what they like to make those kind of things at.
Right.
Which that may not be as good, but I think because of this strong artifact theme capabilities in Modern, I think it'll still be okay.
Right.
Like, think about how good a spell like that would be to enable something like a... what is it that sacrifices an artifact and does 5 damage? Goblin Grenade for artifacts, whatever that's called.
Kadoltha something or another?
No... Shrapnel Blast.
Like, oh, right.
To enable a Shrapnel Blast would be crazy. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities for these kind of things. And they did just reprint a Shrapnel Blast in Standard, so it is possible that they could bring it back while this clue manufacturing is still around.
Right.
I don't know. I another friend of ours, Dan, friend of the show, is working on a Brain in the Jar list, and he's been running a very creature removal heavy package, but something like a couple of these kind of counter spells along the way could definitely be very good with a 1 or 2 confirmed suspicions at the top. I mean, it could just be just the thing you need, and then you run like 1 Tamio's Journal or 2 Tamio's Journals to sit there at the end. I think you could get away with an awful lot of very cool stuff.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that's...
Like, I think these strategies of doing other things with these clues, whether you're gaining life when you sacrifice the clue with the green guy, right? I think he's green.
Yeah, the Graphmole.
Yeah, the Graphmole. Or you're putting a 1/1 counter on your guy, or you're milling your opponent for 3 cards. All these things are useful effects. So I can definitely see this kind of stuff working. And actually, to be perfectly honest, is the lightning bolt where you sacrifice a permanent? It's a creature, right? Still in Standard? Is it a permanent? I think it's a permanent, right?
Sacrifice a mountain?
No, that's... That was not... That hasn't been a Standard in a long time. I was first in the car. What am I thinking of?
Hello, doggies.
Yeah, sorry. It's an instant. I think it's not. I think it just rotated out.
Anyways.
It's in Dragon's Block. I'll think of it eventually, and I'll like scream it out at you.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. It's just, this is a, as a possibility, it's super strong, very powerful right now. I don't know. Whatever.
All right. So.
Make clues is what I'm saying. Make clues everywhere.
Right. So, I had another, on Monday, I had a pretty good run with my draft deck, which is where...
Yeah, because that's your draft day, right? You don't really draft on Fridays. You draft on the off days.
Right, I draft on Mondays. And that's where both the subtitle and my troll card come in.
Okay, what's here? Well, tell us your story.
Essentially, I damn near got that that mono red deck that was on MTG Goldfish.
Oh, yeah?
With the Ravenous Bloodseekers. So, I got two Ravenous Bloodseekers, two Lightning Axes, the Blood Mad Vampire, the 3/5 Vampire that has Madness. And then I had...
Did you get any collateral damages?
You remember the thing.
That's the spell I was thinking of.
Yep.
And it's sacrifice a creature.
Yeah, I did not.
And they are in Fate Reforged. So if you did, you'd be a cheater.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's...
Somebody would be a cheating.
Yeah, exactly. But no, then I got the Choked Estuary and the Blue Red Land that comes into play tapped. And three Geist Blast. So, I mean, I did incredibly well with the tempo swings because it was just, you know, get the Bloodseeker on turn two or even add the Neonate in there.
Right.
And it was just, you know, just madness enablers for days, you know, when it comes to having a 40-card deck anyways. But, yeah, I beat a Werewolf deck, and I was running Grixis because, I mean, why not have Geist Blast?
I mean, as long as you have plenty of red mana, it doesn't really matter. You could throw it in.
Yeah, like, I had two islands, and then the rest were mountains and swamps. So it was essentially, you know, Rakdos Vampire splashing in blue for the Geist Blast ability.
Sure.
But yeah, so I beat a vampire deck. I beat some sort of crazy blue-white mid-range deck, I guess you want to call it. Huh?
Faster than them.
Yeah, I pretty much just raced them. But then my loss came to another Madness Vampire deck, which our longest game was game three, and that one lasted about 4 minutes. If that tells you how quick we were going in our little games there. So, and that's where my troll card of the week comes in because, well, he trolled me with it. He got past the Voldaren Duelist, and he picked up four of them. And that's the 4-drop 3/2 with haste that when it comes into play, target creature can't block this turn.
Okay, that card's very good.
Yeah, he grabbed all four of them. And
set you up where you were unable to block, I assume. At least,
yeah,
not profitably.
Right, because when I left creatures up for blocking, he would just, you know, remove them from the game. Then he also had more battle tricks, which I'm going to have to start grabbing this card just because every time it's been played against me, I've lost simply because miscalculation on my part, or unknown calculation, I should say. The Grotesque Mutation. That's the 2-drop black spell at instant speed. Target creature gets plus 3/1
and
gain lifelink. Yeah, that thing has ruined me so many times that every time I see it now, even if it's not in my colors, I'm just going to take it.
Yeah,
simply because I don't want to play against it. But yeah, that's what happened my Friday and Monday.
That's very cool. Speaking of MTG Goldfish and this podcast in particular, trying to look through here, it looked like April 14th show, which would have been, I don't know what, 3 weeks back, maybe?
Yeah.
Give or take. We did a deck list as one of our challenges for, like, an ultra-budget deck. I thought, right? Didn't we do one that took advantage of, like, the Goblin, or the Make a... Oh, shite. Now I'm trying to think of stuff. They used like Dragon Fodder and Dance of the Devils and stuff like that. Devil's Playground. I feel like we did. Anyway, there's a what they're calling Devil's Goggles list right now floating around on the MTG Goldfish website. And it looks very, very familiar. It's running not quite as budget as we were running, and his impact trimmers are in the sideboard, but the rest of the deck looks very similar.
Nice.
With the impact trimmers out and the Pyromancer's goggles in, where I had one Pyromancer's goggle, I think, intended to go on the sideboard. But you could easily do multiples. But yeah, even a lot of the key cards are still in there. Tormenting Voice, Fall of Titans, One, Mia, and Kieran Lar. Like, a lot of the deck is there. He ran a Descent of Dragons, which is kind of odd to me. But
what are you talking about? Like, at the end of their turn, you make the 4-1 ones? Yeah, and then sure, on your turn, you kill all your dudes, hit them for 4, then you get 4 big-ass dragons?
Sure.
There's no downside, unless, you know, they counter, but whatever.
Well, I just don't understand the... Like, you're never going to double it with goggles, right? Like, you can't destroy any number of target creatures and get more.
Right, but the thing is...
If you had the impact trimmers, it'd make sense, because then you could destroy them all, make new ones, destroy them all, make new ones.
Right.
But without putting that in there, I don't get it. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this plays. It's a little more expensive for on Magic Online than I'm willing to just throw into a deck just to play with. But over half of this deck's cost is Westville Abbey Online. So it's easy enough to throw that out. Goggles are currently sitting at $20 for 3.
Online,
yep.
Ugh.
So, I mean, I think I could cut that. I think, like I said, I could adjust these Descent of Dragons out for something else, maybe. Or leave them, I don't know. It's only another $4. But if you were to take out the goggles and the Westville Abbeys, you're taking out $33 of the $42 deck.
Nice.
Yeah, I might just yank out these Westfell Abbeys and give it a shot and see. Like, I've been looking for something. I haven't been playing my Tuesday morning standard for the last couple weeks. I've been playing Shining Force instead. But it is totally possible that this is just the kind of deck I need to...
Get motivated.
To get me motivated that Tuesday morning. You know, a Tuesday morning, I'm just like, oh, I still don't have a deck that I want to play. Why do I do this to myself? Do I even want to play? I don't know. It's pretty weird. But I think it'll be okay. But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. But I remember when we started talking about it, I saw the correlation between our deck and their deck. And I think that's one of those situations where I don't want to say great minds think alike, but I want to say, like, good brewers are looking for these kind of advantages.
Right.
I don't know. What do you have coming up on your calendar that you're preparing for? Do you have anything?
Well, this Friday there is going to be a sealed event that I'm looking forward to playing to in, which means I need to get...
So, spoiler alert, Travis is coming home this weekend, back to Salina. So it's the, we've talked about it on and get off again for a while now, that he took off to South Dakota.
Yep.
And he has not been able to get back to play at any of these events. And he's coming back for, I think, a graduation.
Yeah, my cousin's graduating on Sunday.
So we scheduled him a Winnebox on Saturday, which is literally the only event I have on my calendar that I care about.
You don't care about the sealed on Friday?
I mean, we literally did a sealed 2 weeks ago.
And whose fault was that?
It was kind of my fault in the sense that I already had it on the schedule. And then you're like, hey, I'm coming home. Make a sealed that weekend.
I gave you more than 2 weeks notice. I gave you like a month and a half.
Right. Well, we do the calendar usually 2 months in advance. So.
Oh, well, see, that's your fault for planning ahead more than me.
I know. It's terrible. But basically, my point is that I'm fine doing a sealed. I'm happy doing the sealed. But it's not, like, high on my list of things that I really need to worry about. Like, I'm going to go. It's going to be great. Who's worried about it? I am not. However, you know, I do like to play in the winner boxes, and I haven't gotten a win at winner box yet. I played in enough winner boxes, I could have just purchased a box by now.
Right.
So I'd like to get one pretty soon and be like, yes, I got my box. And then maybe win another one so that I'm up a box. But, you know, for the 15 bucks that we play, usually the 3 to 5 rounds, you know how many people are there, it's worth it for the fun and the good times.
Oh, definitely.
That's really what you're paying for, but I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I don't even know what to play. Should I play something different? Should I play my black, green, no. Whatever I played last weekend or the last big tournament. I can't think of what it's called, Travis. My brain is so melty.
Oh, no.
It's the green, black, splashing white. Amardu, that's the colors.
That's Abzan.
What? No, I said...
Green, black, and white is Abzan?
No, I said red and black, splashing white. That's Amardu.
He definitely said green.
All right, well, whatever I said was wrong. And I'm definitely playing...
Mardu.
I have seen some people take a slight variation of the deck list that I'm playing, and instead of running the white, they are running blue for Jace and something else. I would have to look.
Can we kill Jace yet?
No. I like this Jace. The problem with this Jace is apparently he is free-falling like nobody would imagine. I really like this guy, especially now. I think he's doing a lot of work, but he's just not getting there. Here we go. Grixis Control. Let's see what I'm missing here. It is running Jace. And that is it. It's running Jace in the main deck. In the sideboard, it's running 2 Dragonlord Solemnguard. And that is it. So instead of running white for the Planeswalker, Sorin, they're running Jace's and Dragonlord Solemnguard. That might be good enough. You know? I don't know. I think losing the 2/3 lifelink command land is wrong. That's one of the reasons I was definitely excited to play it, as well as the fact that you also have the white-red double-striking one. Then going to from 7 to 8 man lands down to 3 or 4 with the Wandering Fumarole, I just don't think is quite as good. I don't know. No. Have you seen this list at all, Travis?
I haven't.
Okay, well,
Is it one of the top eights? From GP?
It looks like it was used to go 8-2 at the Pro Tour Shadows over Innistrad.
Yep, haven't seen it.
I don't know how well this guy actually did the rest of the time, but that's kind of what's going on. Looks like they played with the numbers a little bit and up the... number of Kalidases to the play set of 4. I'm trying to see what they cut. Looks like they cut some Radiant Plains, maybe.
I want a big truck.
There they go, big truck. I do live on a busy street. I apologize.
I forgive you.
I don't know. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff. Should we talk about the GP decks?
Yeah, that should be a good thing.
All right, so as we discovered in the... I don't know what you want to call it, the pre-banter section of the show.
Right, when...
There was, in fact, 2 GPs this last weekend. I thought there was. I just couldn't think of...
Oh, what was the non-American one?
I think you decided it was Tokyo.
Yeah, because, you know, it's spelled Tokyo.
I'm pretty sure it's not Tokyo, as a matter of fact. I'm pretty sure it's something completely different. So I'm just going to kind of hit the top 8 Tokyo... deck list here. We have a green black aristocrats deck, which I think is quite strong right now. A white black. Say what?
Did you post that one?
I will put a link to that top eight as well. I'll have both URLs to the top eight. So
how's that? All right.
I've been playing a deck very similar to this. To be truthful, my list does not run Vile Redeemers because I don't have an easy way to get colorless. But other than that, this deck is very similar to something I'm running. Let's see, what else we had? We have a Black-White Humans deck, which I think is also very strong right now. It was one of my few losses on game day. What is it called? Talia's Lieutenant?
Yeah, that card is
actually very, very strong. And it's running the Thraven Inspectors, which we've decided is one of the better cards.
Yeah.
In the format, and you should just have them in every deck, probably. Let's see. Then there's a Naya Midrange running the Nahari, the Harbinger, which apparently is doing amazing things in Legacy, I guess.
Yep.
Or maybe Vintage. Apparently, there's not a lot of ways to deal with a Planeswalker.
Well,
so you could either just tick it up, or you can tick it up to the point where you can do the -8 and go get, like, what is the big 15-15?
Emrakul.
Yeah, you just go get an Emrakul and attack with it, because it gives it haste and everything.
Yeah. Well, see, and the thing with Nahiri, she enables you to get rid of the dead miracles in your hand, and that's what some of us were talking about, was they're using it to get rid of the dead miracles.
Right. Yeah, definitely doing a lot of work in the Miracle deck in particular, but I felt like I saw her in a couple other lists. It's very interesting what she's doing. Not doing a lot in Standard before this particular deck list, though. But looks good to me. I'm not seeing, like, one huge big bomb to go get. I guess there's one Linvala. I guess there's a Dragon Lord Atarka. So I take it back. There are a couple of big bombs to go get.
There's a playset of Avacyn. Whatever. You know, nothing major.
Well, every deck basically that's in white right now is playing Avacyn if they have.
Not mine.
Well, except for you, silly panda man.
But that's for two reasons.
Well, you
number one,
$40 in Avacyn.
Yeah, number one, I don't have that kind of money. Number two, my white deck doesn't have creatures.
That's right. Then we have a green-white tokens running the Nissa from Zendikar, Gideon from Zendikar, like a Den Protector, a Vastwood Seer, Archangel Avacyn, Sylvan Advocate, Lumbolic Pacifist, which is one of those cards that we kind of talked about could be very interesting. It's a 3/3 for 2 that can't attack unless you control a creature with power 4 or greater. But then it can flip into, if I remember right,
it's just a 4/4.
It's 4/4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like with no drawbacks. Like a 4/4 for 2 mana is pretty good. Airback Walker, Tragic Arrogance, the main deck, Evolutionary Leap. Like, I really like this list. This is one of the lists that we were talking about before we started to record. That Remington was putting together a quote unquote token list. And he's running, like, what they're running over Michael Segrest ran this last weekend. We'll get into that in just a minute. But we were like, man, this deck does not seem anywhere near as good as Morofuji? Oh, gee. Morofuji? I don't know. It looks way
worse. Let's call him Takuma.
It looks his way, first name. Looks way worse than his deck. I would play this version of the deck any day of the week, I think. Then we have a four-color collected company. Basically, it's your standard Aristocrats deck, except it is splashing for Reflector Mage. And if you make the mana work, it's got all these colorless pain lands in it anyway. So running something like an Eldrazi Displacer is no problem.
Yeah.
That also lets you run the Brood Monitor combo.
I want to do the green-white tokens with these two, the Monitor and the Displacer, and then Impact Tremors, then all of the Devils.
Sure. I could see that possibly being a thing. I could play this minus the Reflector Mage. I just don't feel like it's necessary. I guess if you're already adding all sorts of colored, all the pain lands anyway, you might as well run it because it's not going to cost you anything. But I would rather run the full four cutthroats in my list.
Right, just
for preference sake.
Just cut out one Sifter and one Loam Dryad, and boom, put in two Impact Tremors, five color company.
It is a possibility. I don't know. We'll have to look at it later.
Bad possibility. Let's do it.
And then we got the deck that you were all excited about, this Grixis Control list.
Oh, yeah.
Again, it ran Ishtandra, Jace's, Kalidus. Kalidus is a card that I wish I would have bought when it was a little bit cheaper.
As soon as...
I just have one.
As soon as those things spiked, I got rid of all three.
Did you? I just felt like it's a solid card. It was a good card. But I didn't think it was going to take over Standard. And I think I was wrong. Like, this is probably one... Of all the cards that I should have purchased or got myself into, this Kalidus, I think, is definitely top of the pile. I don't know. It's hard telling, I guess. It also, people are running main deck Dragonlord Solemgar, which I think is a good call. A couple of our guys here locally have been running main deck Dragonlord Solemgar. I think it's probably good call with the kind of metagame that our metagame is like. We have a lot of control decks floating to the top, but not a lot of aggressive decks floating to the top. So just being able to like steal somebody's ready to ultimate planeswalker is very, very strong.
I have lost to someone doing that here. They're playing Esper Control. And I was on 8 loyalty counters with my Obnixilus. And he's like, huh, well, here's Dragonlord Solemgar. Oh, look at this Obnix list that I have. Oh, look at this sweet little emblem that you now have. I pass turn.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll just slowly kill myself. He's like, don't worry, I'll help. Painful truth for 3? Well, I guess I'll take 3 and you take 6. So, I mean, you know, whatever.
I'm just going to take all these cards and put them together in one big pile and shuffle them to the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's pretty good. So, he's getting a lot of love right now. Whether or not that stays the trend, I don't know. But he is a 3/5, which, with the exception of the red removal spell, see if I can find it here.
Lightning Axe?
I mean, Lightning Axe also would work, but there's a like Tears of Valakut, I think, maybe.
Oh, yeah, okay. The one where you...
It does 5 damage to a flying creature.
Right, or a planeswalker? Is that what that...
It could also be a planeswalker. I'm not 100% sure.
Me either.
But it's like a red and a colorless for an instant that does 5 damage to a flyer. That's the only reason it's important to me, is I need to be able to kill these 3/5 monsters in the air. Dragonlord Solemgar, the freaking Angel of Tides, those kind of things. Then we have another green-white tokens. This one is a little bit closer to meeting in the middle. It runs main deck Secure the Waste, where the other one that we talked about did not. I could play this one, too. I could get behind this. I don't know. My biggest problem with this whole situation is trying to figure out how many tokeny type effects you really want. I like the idea of playing a Gideon and then either plussing it to grab a, I guess, zeroing it to make a 2/2, or even plussing it if you have some way to give it haste or some other ability to happen. Because he's a human.
What interesting segue. Did you say red-white tokens with Bushwhacker? Let's go.
I didn't, but I mean, that could be a thing.
It's too late now.
That could definitely be a thing. I'd like to see some more stuff. The ability to take negative Gideon and play a Secure the Waste the next turn for 5 tokens. Like, that's a big hit. 10 potential damage is, I guess it wouldn't be 5. I guess it would only be 4, right? So I guess 8, but still 8 damage. That's a lot, especially if play a Nissa the next turn and make them all 3/3s.
Right.
That seems very, very strong, especially if you have, like, a Sylvan Advocate ready to go. The biggest problem with this list is you don't have any of those exciting creature lands. And I just don't know how to fit one in, because there isn't one in green-white. So you're going to have to branch out. And what is one of the ones that are green? Just the green-black, right?
Well, there's green-black and green-blue. Lumbering Falls, a 3/3 with Hexproof.
I wonder if this could be a... Could this be a Naya deck? Is there a reason to run blue for any reason besides the fact that you want the man lands to go with the Sylvan Advocates? I'm curious. Anyway. So those are kind of the top 8 deck lists over there. I can hit the button and figure out who actually won with what deck list in just a second.
There's no actually blue token producers. I think it'd be better to go black, because that would still give you a man land, and it would give you the cutthroat. So you make tokens, and they're like, yeah, I'll kill your tokens, and then they take damage for it.
Maybe.
Yeah, like I was kind of like, eh.
So Ryu Kujumaja? Kumaja? I don't know. Anyway, it was the Naya midrange deck that actually took it.
Riku? Kumagaji?
I don't know. I'm not a sounder outer.
Let's just, not refer to their names and just refer to their decks.
The Naya midrange deck?
Yeah, there you go.
I do like this. I think it's a good weekend for Nahiri. This Oath of Nissa's to work with the Nahiris and the Chandras, I think, are a lot of work.
See, and
Dragon Lords, Zavala. Generally, I think pretty solid.
No, there's a guy here who has a Naya Super Friends, essentially.
That sounds hot.
It has Nahiri, Chandra, Arlen Cord, both Nissas, and then the Sylvan Advocates, the Oath of Nissa, Gideon. Basically, I think there's like 15 or 16 Planeswalkers. And I think he also has Call of the Planeswalker or whatever, Call of the Gatewatch.
Sure. You gotta run that. If you're gonna run one ofs or two ofs, you gotta be able to tutor up what you need.
Right. And he actually won game day with it. Or not game day, but states.
Very cool. I actually had one in the process of being laid out, but then we decided to do other decks instead. So.
Of course.
I would love to see a deck list. I put it together. So.
I can message him, and then... Yeah, I can message him, tell him to send me the deck list, and then I'll post it to you so you can put it in the show notes.
If you get it to me before I post the show notes on Thursday, I'll be happy to do that.
All right, I'll just talk to him now.
So while you're kind of doing that, I'm going to run through the top 8 deck lists here that happened in New York City. We have another green-white tokens list that we kind of talked about before that's, in my opinion, a little worse than some of the ones we saw overseas. Seth Manfield, I believe, won with this sweet black-white control list. I'm really, really pleased with the black-white control or the red-white touching black lists that are out there right now. I think there's just so many strong cards. This deck didn't even run the tutor at all in the 75. I cannot think of what the tutor is called, but I do not see it anywhere.
What are you talking about?
What's the 5 mana tutor, and if you have the spell master, you get 3 mana?
Oh, right. Dark Petition.
Dark Petition. Seth Manfield here is not running Dark Petition at all, and he, which seems odd to me.
Not really.
I guess not. He's, the other big thing is he's running two main deck Hollowed Moonlights and one in the sideboard, which I think is really great. Especially with all the token decks that were floating around. I wonder, did they figure out what beats the black-green control list that the Pantheon people put together?
What, are you talking about Seasons Past?
Yeah, the Season Past control list.
You know what beats that? Infinite Obliteration.
I guess that could, right? Because that hits... You just hit anything, right?
Well, you... Yeah, but...
I think it's got to be a creature.
The most important thing is you name Kalidus.
Oh, and takes out their main win condition?
It takes out their main win condition, so they can't gain any more life. And then... All you really have to do after that is... Like...
Be careful with your creature lands or whatever to not get have too many of their removal spells.
Well, it's just after that you just with this black white control list you just get Sorn and Gideon and you just go to town.
That's true. Sorn, Omnixilus, and Gideon, those three guys do an awful lot of work.
Yeah, powerhouses.
Get to too many Runeless Paths, they can go the distance.
Right.
I'd be curious to see how it. Oh, we also ran one Displacer in the sideboard. For what?
I would.
Silence? Kalidus?
I would assume so they can.
Oh, that's tasty.
Get rid of some of their creatures?
Well, I think with Thought Not Seer and Displacer, you could probably go boom, 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 and exile their, their infinity things are.
Yeah, exile the things that they need to win and just...
Right.
Like wow, that could be good with anything.
Yeah, I think that's quite good. Eldrazi Displacer and Thought Not Seer are an excellent combo together. There might even be like a good white colorless control deck. Maybe even white-black control deck right now. The heavy on the Shambling Vents and the Caves of Kolios.
That's crazy.
Then, of course, we have another four-color. They're calling it Cryptic Rite. I'd call it Aristocrats. Even less Zulaport Cutthroats.
Well, I think that's why they're calling it Cryptolith, because there's less Aristocrat function here.
Why would you put in the Brood Monitor Displacer combo if you're not running something like Cutthroat?
You know, because reasons. Just
like the one that's in there, that seems so hardcore to me.
Well, I think that's why they have the four Catacomb Sifters.
Well, sure, you run Catacomb
so that way,
Sifters because they're just good. Like, they're three power and four toughness over two creatures.
That whenever something dies, you scry.
Sure, I don't know. I guess I don't understand why you continuously cut the thing that just lets you infinitely combo off as soon as you get there. That just seems weird to me. But yeah, I would play this list too. I could also see cutting a Rite for another Cutthroat. I could see cutting a Duskwatcher for another Cutthroat or the Reflector Mages all together for Cutthroats. I don't know. It's just me. Let's see. Then we have another Green-White Tokens deck by Michael Majors, who's been doing very good. This one's very similar to what we were talking about before. This one's running two main deck Evolutionary Leaps, which I think is pretty interesting tech, especially when you're Evolutionary Leaping into, like, what? A Hangerback Walker, a Sylvan Advocate, or an Abyssin?
Yeah.
Like, these are powerful cards. I think that's the real advantage of these token decks with these Evolutionary Leaps is like, well, I'm going to sacrifice my Hangerback Walker and make four tokens, go get my Sylvan Advocate. But again, no man lands.
I think it's more or less, oh, look at this 0/1 chump blocker that just turned into an Archangel.
Sure. I mean, again, the power of the Evolutionary Leap could go get the Abyssin, could go get the the Sylvan Advocate. You go get a Hanging Back Walker. Just so many good things you can get. Let's see. We also got a White Black Control. Four or three Gideons, one Sworn, a Hanger Back. This is the one that's running. Is it Ailey?
Yeah, Ailey, Ailey, whatever.
Eternal Pilgrims, Kalidas's, Archangel Avison's. Not enough Read the Bones, in my opinion, going on in these White Black Control decks, yep, though.
If you have less than four, then you shouldn't even run any.
Yeah.
Just quit.
Seth Manfield is running four, so he's definitely in the right pack. But a lot of these guys are running threes. Just don't understand the threes. Like, cut something else, mate. Cut a Silk Wrap. Like, you could cut one Silk Wrap in the sideboard and run your fourth Read the Bone.
Yeah, no kidding.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Then we got some green-white tokens. Basically the same thing. I don't see anything super spicy in it. A Grixis Control List. We kind of talked about this one has one Solemn Guard, Dragonlord Solemn Guard in the main, and one in the sideboard. So, again, people are running the Solemn Guards, but they're running interesting splits, I think. Another four-color Aristocrat deck. Another one that's running two Cutthroats and three Rites. Obviously, people are onto something, and I'm just wrong. I don't know.
I'm telling you, it's all about the Sifter.
Well, I still run four Sifters.
Well, and I think...
I get what you're saying. You set up your combo with your Displacer, and you sift through the deck until you find the one.
Yeah.
And then you draw it and play it somehow magically?
Well, you have Duskwatch Recruiter, Elvish Visionary. You know, those will let you draw if... Because, I mean, once you have the Brood Monitor and you have the Displacer, you are literally spending none of your actual mana to run through your deck.
That's true.
Even with Cryptorith Rites, you are spending none of your actual mana to run through the deck. And you just... You scry until you get the Cutthroat, and then you just,
and then
you draw your one card.
You blink your vision, your Elvish Missionary or whatever, and then you draw. All right, I see it.
Or
collect a company for it.
See, and I think that's why they're running, you know, one or two, because everything else, I mean, with the exception of Reflector Mage.
Which I still don't think I'd like.
Yeah, I think it's just to slow something down, but...
Like, to me, that's something you're on, like, two of.
Right.
Because so often you just get there by collecting company into two Cutthroats with a bunch of other creatures.
Right.
And then I just sacrifice them all to, like, a Husk or to a Westcott Vale Abbey and just go to town.
Yeah.
I've always liked
the Brood Monitor.
I really like that combo, right? The Brood Monitor, the Displacer, and either the Cutthroat or the Impact Trimmers, whichever one you prefer, or both, whatever.
Well, I mean, since I can't have Pandemonium.
Sure.
I mean, granted, that would hurt, especially with Ulamog running around still.
I want to point out that this last one, Louis Del Tor.
Yeah.
He's running the two Thought Not Seers in the sideboard. Mm-hmm. I think it's really good. Because, again, I think that combination of Thought Not Seer, Displacer is how you beat the infinite, what do you call it, Seasons Pass list?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Pretty pleased overall. Which of these 16 decks would you run tomorrow if you had a big tournament tomorrow?
If I had a big tournament tomorrow... I would probably, and obviously actually I do have all the cards for this. I'd run the Black-White Control simply because I love Obnixilis. Soren's always been a good friend of mine. And I like a control deck that isn't blue.
Yeah.
I say that as I'm running a blue-white control list.
Well, I mean, of the three decks that I have put together right now, you know, again, I've got the black-red splashing white for Sorin, aka Mardu control deck. And, you know, I'm pretty pleased with how it sits. It kind of gets the job done. I'm really surprised not one of these top eight decks ran the, what was the tutor again?
Because Dark Petition.
Dark Petition. None of them are running Dark Petition, even in the sideboard. Like, that's where that is where I put it. I put it in the sideboard to go tutor up the answer I need. But none of these people seem to have run into Gaia's Revenge out of the sideboard. So that thing did some work against my face the last big tournament I was in. Let's see. We got a couple of little things here. We did get a follow-up email from Matthias. Do you remember the deck from last week? If not, you can go over to samusgrobo.com and scroll down just real quickly to check it out again.
Start talking anyways.
He asked us, he put a bunch of content in here that I'll share with you later. He did really like the idea of the Sarkon, and he definitely wanted to add the Dragonland, Haven, and the Spirit Dragon to be able to cast those dragons, all those dragons without reanimation. But he wanted to know about removal package. Do we have any suggestions, or do you think it's enough and will hold up? So the removal in his deck was essentially
ultimate.
Two languages. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say ultimate price to the slaughter, ruinous path, and languish.
Two languish, two ruinous path, one to the slaughter, three ultimate price. Honestly, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I really like that removal package. If you want a more consistent removal that will also potentially negate damage to you, you know, Obnixilus. Otherwise, no, that removal package is great, especially since you have Dragonlord Atarka,
right,
which is essentially a removal package.
I mean, my biggest problem is, you know, again, looking at the kind of things that we've been dealing with, you're dealing with all these Sylvan Advocates out of the board or in some, you know, in a few cases, and the main Tireless Trackers, but ultimate prices get the job done against those guys. So then the next thing you're kind of looking at is really the Dragonlord Solengar being the only other thing that you really can't deal with via an ultimate price. And those kind of decks, that's usually the only creature that they have at that moment, right? So I think that gives you a good spot. I don't know. Personally, I'd probably put at least one of the -4/-4 Grasp of Darkness in here somewhere.
Right.
Possibly cutting something like the Dark Petition for it altogether.
Ulamog.
If you're not going to run it. Or the Ulamog, yeah. I could definitely see cutting Ulamog.
Or the Oath of Jace.
Well, we talked about that, and that was one of the cards that he actually did have a separate comment about.
Okay.
I thought I would just pitch in since I felt you missed some of the details about Oath of Jace. I actually think it should go up to the fourth, since drawing three, discarding two is exactly what I want to do to set up the reanimations.
Oh, so, yeah.
So, yeah, well, it's more of a discard enabler in how he's kind of playing it.
Okay.
Which I could totally get. I still think if it was me, what I would be doing is I'd be focusing on more. I'd run as many of the Dragon Lords as I could cram into the deck. And I would run as many Nagging Thoughts as I could get away with, and as many Jaces as I felt like I could play with, and then whatever other discard I could kind of use to take advantage of things. I don't know. He did say that he would like to see the list that I was tinkering around with, but I got distracted and didn't actually do it. So I'll try to throw that into my list of things to do this week. I've got some work I've been putting off that I need to also get done, plus editing this podcast. But I will do what I can to get that out and sent off to you guys, hopefully this week. I may have to send myself some sort of reminder, but I definitely feel like there's something really cool here. This whole Necromantic Summon slash Ever After combo, I think, is very, very cool. And just digging through as many cards as I possibly could is definitely the way to go.
Like, it kind of seems to me that, you know, even instead of nagging thoughts, put in pieces of the past or pieces of the puzzle.
I don't know which one is that.
That's the 3-drop where you look at the top 5 and get an instant or sorcery, throw the rest in the yard. There's enough instants and sorceries that you want in your hand that you don't mind throwing away the creatures.
Well, and you want to put the creatures in the graveyard. I guess my problem with, or my thinking is nagging the thoughts, is because you want to set up as much discard effects as you can anyway. So you might as well take advantage of stuff like the Madness Outlets. Right? So if you don't have a Dragon Lord to throw away, you can just go through your deck like a, you know, I don't know, a sex-crazed jackrabbit with these nagging thoughts and just be like, all right, well, I don't have a Dragon Lord that I want to pitch in my hand, but I have this Jace that I do want to activate, so I will Jace, draw. I still don't have a Dragon Lord I want to put in there, or I need an answer. I'll discard this nagging thoughts, go again, essentially. Like, it just seems to me like the combination of nagging thoughts with Jace really is what makes this deck kind of go. And maybe this is where you run things like the Tormenting Voice if you want to kind of widen your colors up a little bit. I know he's was at least leaning very heavily blue-black, but I don't know. I still feel like really pushing the discard outlets is the way to be. I don't know. Like I said, I'll try putting together a list. My version of the list may turn out to be a lot more Grixis-y than this list is. This list is none.
Right.
And I'm kind of obsessed with the Felwyn Dark Dwellers plus
anything.
Tormenting Voice plus being a giant cheating bastard. So,
right.
So, I mean, maybe I'll, you know, maybe I can combine those kind of things together into something that makes this go a little sweeter. So I'm going to sign off with our game this week. Is going to be a little bit different.
Okay.
We actually got sent a question from a follower here, a friend of the show, Nathan. And he actually sent us surprise cards as in ones that you didn't think would end up being staples. So I'm going to give you a second while I run through the sign-off here for any cards that you thought were kind of took you a little bit of a surprise that end up being staples that maybe you didn't think that were going to be. So anyway, you can get this podcast at samusgrobo.com or at mtgcast.com. You can, of course, send us an email like Matthias, like Dan, like Nathan. At the number 2, trollsbrew@gmail.com. You can, of course, check out my Twitch stream. I stream every single day at twitch.tv/SamusGarobo. You can follow us at Twitter. I'm Samus Garobo, all one word, SamusGarobo. And Travis, of course, is TurtlePower319. So, Travis, woe me with the cards that you thought were staples, or turned out to be staples that you didn't think were going to be staples.
All right.
And that could be any time, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, out of this set, Innistrad, I'm actually kind of surprised that Cryptolith Rite is not just a draft card or a limited card. It's actually seeing pretty well use in a few different decks. And the one that we both kind of agree on, Thraven Inspector. I mean,
Thraven Inspector, I would agree with you on. I feel like we called Cryptolith Rites, though.
Yeah, we might have.
I feel like we did. I felt like because we had so many tokeny type effects, like that one I don't think kind of snuck up on me. I'm going to go out on a limb and talk about Kalidus again. Like I said, I picked up one, and I really didn't feel the urge to agree with another one. I just didn't think that he was going to be the linchpin of Standard.
Right.
And I was super wrong. And he's kind of one of the best creatures in the format right now.
Yeah, which is just, I don't want to say absurd, but it's kind of unusual, I guess. But other than that, like, I really don't think of anything else that's, you know, super impressive as much as just, you know, it's there.
Well, what do you think about Jace? Like, think back to Jace Vern's Prodigy, right? Like, that card, nobody thought that guy was even any good at all.
I did.
He was a $5 card.
Vern's Prodigy? Okay, so when Magic Origins came out, I said, well, I was discussing with people at the shop here that in the order of power with the card, like with the Planeswalkers, I said that Jace was going to be the most effective. Then it was going to be Lily. Then it was going to be Kytheon. And then I had Nissa and then Chandra. So far, I'm right with Jace because he can just be put into any deck.
Right.
He is a two drop that filters, and then he turns.
Right, a Merfolk Looter is never bad if that's all the value you get out of it. Often, though, you're going to have your deck set up in such a way that you can get more value than that.
Right, and then so far I'm right with both Kytheon and Lily. They just, you know, switch places now, with Kytheon being the more prevalent currently. But before it was Lily that was big. And then, with the exception of the ramp deck, Nissa's not really doing anything, and Chandra definitely isn't doing anything.
Yeah, Chandra kind of depresses me a little bit. I did pick up a set on Magic Online. Not a full set, but a couple, because they were super cheap. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago or whatever, or several shows ago, and she's very good, very, very good. If given an opportunity to kind of get some work done, she can just go crazy. I'm kind of surprised there isn't like a red, blue control thing built around like a lot of red instants and sorceries that do weird things. And Thing in the Ice. Like, I really would think that there'd be a Thing in the Ice deck by now. Like, it feels like there's a good Thing in the Ice deck. And I think that Thing in the Ice deck runs Chandra. Because I think you just stack the abilities in such a way that you can get the value out of Chandra, flip her over, and then flip over your Thing in the Ice with no problem.
Right.
And then Chandra can easily clear the way for the Thing in the Ice. If it's needed. Alright, so I don't know. I could be wrong. I would like to put some sort of list like that together as well. But I don't know. If I were to think further back, like, I was not particularly impressed with Vendilion Click when it first came out. Like, to me, that was a card that kind of surprised me with how good it was. In fact, I think it only had one or two. And I played the hell out of that set.
Right.
The other thing that I really was not a big fan of was Glitter Blossom out of that set. I was definitely in this five-color control mindset during that time frame. And if it involved losing life or double-color mana, I was just not interested. But, you know, we didn't have something like Modern, really. We had Type 2.
And Type 2 and Type 1.
And it really wasn't a thing. Like, they created this Modern format, and it's just something that wasn't really around then. I don't know. Can you think of anything else that maybe you kind of overlooked? Like, if you go way, 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 way back, right? My first box, I didn't think it was all that great. Tarmogoyf. I always liked Tarmogoyf. I always thought Tarmogoyf was real good.
No, that it just made me laugh because, well, Birkenbein. You remember? Okay, so were you
I remember
playing
the name. the name. Which one was Zach? Griffin by? Yeah, okay, Zach.
When he was still playing, we did the sealed or release event or something, and he got two Tarmogoyfs. And he thought that they were absolute garbage.
Okay.
So he ripped them in half.
Okay.
Like, on, you know, on the pre-release date or whatever. He's like, well, these cards are just worthless, and he just destroyed them. And then, you know, about 3 weeks later or whatever, when the Pro Tour happened or whichever big event.
Well, see, just the Pro Tour, that first Pro Tour, people were still arguing whether they were good or they were bad.
Right, but, you know, they still skyrocketed in price. And he was, overall, he was just so upset with himself. That's why I laughed at that, because I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. Like I said, back when I first started playing Magic, you know, I had a Ruby Mox.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever, it's just play an extra land. Who cares? Whatever. I'll play a land the next turn. So I don't know if I would go out on a limb and say that's now a staple. I think it's definitely a staple of Vintage. But, I mean, that's the kind of mindset I think that you can have when you're not evaluating these cards on their individual power level, especially when you're not looking at an eternal time frame, right? When you're looking at forever, like this Jace Unraveler of Secrets, is fine. Like, he's a good Jace. I mean, he literally on it says plus one, scry one, then draw a card.
Right.
For five mana. Like, if he lives for two turns, he's a five mana scry two, draw two. Like, that's very good. But when you look at him in the situation of standard, he's not very good. He's just essentially a six loyalty planeswalker that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I'm going to try and pick up two because I want to put him in the mill control deck. Because yeah, well, Sphinx's tutelage is still a thing.
Yeah, I mean I think he's probably fine. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's terrible. The same kind of thing with this Tamiyo's Journal. I think it's good, but it isn't game-breaking. But in Modern, maybe something could happen. It would be great. You know, in a deck like... what is it that makes all the mana?
Red-Green Ramp?
Well, I was thinking the Tron deck, sorry. And oh, right. Something like Tron, you can really get that kind of going, you know what I mean? So it is possible something like Tamiyo's Journal can be quite good in some place like Tron or in some place in Modern. Like one of the blue-black walking artifact decks, you know, might use something like that. I mean, it does make an artifact token each turn. Right?
Yeah.
You could also sacrifice to draw a card or lose life or whatever else that thing does. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things. We just need to take the lesson of slowly evaluate to each card individually and see not only that it's good in standard, but also see if it's good in other formats as well. And I guess that's one of the secrets of being a good troll, right? Because a lot of people will misevaluate cards. And not correctly evaluate the situation that you could put it in to make that card good or bad. Travis, any closing thoughts before I go eat my Chinese food?
Oh, man, I want Chinese food.
Come over.
Oh, all right. I'll be there in like 3 days. Yeah.
Done.
Cool. You know,
we could go out afterwards for Chinese food or something.
Yeah, oh, that won't happen.
Open, but
nope.
But we'll go out afterwards anyway.
All right, sounds good.
All right. Say your tagline so we can go.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to keep going with stuff. But no, troll on, everybody.
Peace and troll on, everybody.